How did the first week of school go? All right. Hey, guys, and welcome to the Three Drinks In podcast, episode number 184. I am your host, Vince. Over there is your host, Phil.
Here I am over here.
There's Phil. In this episode, we are talking about the Netflix original movie, The Old Guard. Before we get into all that, though, I want to remind you that Three Drinks In is available on all streaming services, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and iHeartRadio. Make sure that you go there and subscribe. Make sure that you tell your friends and leave a review. You can follow us on social media at 3DrinksInPod on Twitter and Instagram. That's at the number 3DrinksInPod. You can find us on Facebook, and you can email us at 3DrinksInPodcast@gmail.com. All right. So, yes.
Netflix cranks out these movies now.
We never have to leave our homes ever again.
I know. We barely have been, so that's fine.
Well, right, yeah. You know, we'll get there one day. They're not going to do the same thing with the new James Bond movie, I think, so we'll probably have to go see that.
Oh, weird.
But I kind of want to see Tenet, but I don't think I can just yet where I live.
Well, we live in the tri-state area of New York, so actually, like, it's really hard to find theaters that are open.
You can do it in Jersey. I know you can. People have gone. I know somebody I heard on a podcast went to Elizabeth, New Jersey to watch a movie, and I'm thinking, my God.
Ugh, I'm not going to Elizabeth, New Jersey.
The size of the gun you have to point to my head to make me drive to Elizabeth, New Jersey to do anything.
I could just stick my head in the dumpster if I really wanted to smell Elizabeth, New Jersey. Good Lord.
Seriously. But yeah. But so, yeah, we went back to Netflix. And
yeah, well, like, I knew they were making these things. Like, this came out in July, and we just didn't get to it because that's how Netflix is, where it's like, I'll get to it eventually. You know, like, there's no rush. And I've put things on my Netflix queue literally for years, and they come and go because, you know, they lose the rights and they get the rights back. So I've seen things pop up like, oh, yeah, I meant to watch that. I guess it's back. And then I never do again. So even with this, it was like, I'll get to it, you know, 96% match or whatever on Netflix. And then finally we were like, well, there are no movies still, so let's look back at our queue and see what there is.
Yeah, nothing really new premium type things, like, you know, released early kind of, you know, which it's amazing. Like, we were talking about, like, how hard it was to find good stuff and just what an absolute gem Palm Springs was. Like, in terms of, like, this is the exact kind of movie that I needed to have happen right then. It, not an original concept exactly, because it's clearly not. But, you know, something lighthearted and funny with two very vibrant actors and pretty clever script and, you know, free on Hulu, so like, yeah, let's just do it. It was perfect, and I was looking for something like that. Like, is there anything out that's good? Oh no, it's all what we could kind of manage, sort of thing. Like, I can't call this a B movie because it certainly looked expensive and it featured a lot of A-list talent, but at the same time, it's not a, like, you know, it's a VOD movie for Netflix. So it's sort of like the whole A-B movie grade thing is certainly more difficult to justify now. It's, we have many subtle layers of movie levels.
Yeah. Well, I mean, so, Palm Springs was, it was great because that's the kind of movie that is a sit down in your home and watch, you know, not interrupted or anything, but like, you feel good watching that on the couch. I enjoyed it in the theater as well, but it's a good couch movie with, like, your girlfriend or something.
Yeah, that's true. It didn't require, like, a giant screen and, you know, an egotistical director refusing to release it on, you know, on demand.
Yeah.
You know, and I kind of get his, Nolan's point about not releasing it on VOD, because I did see Dunkirk after the fact and looked at it and go, Yeah, I don't know why I avoided that in the theaters. I should have just gone. I heard a rumor that Dunkirk was like a two-hour movie that was basically the first 30 minutes of Saving Private Ryan. I go, well, I don't want to watch that. That sounds awful. But it wasn't that at all. It was really badly word-of-mouth marketed to me, and so I didn't bother with it. And then when I saw it, I was like, oh, yeah, I would have benefited from seeing this in, you know, on a bigger screen, 70 millimeters, for Christ's sakes. So, glug. Anyway.
All right. So, what All did right. you think of The Old Guard?
It was fine, I guess. So, like, I think my biggest thing that I noticed was, like, the first half of the movie, like the first 50 minutes, were pretty solid. And then you had another hour and 10 that was like, it's almost like it was written by a different person. So for those of you who are just joining us and don't know what we're talking about, The Old Guard is a graphic novel that they turned into a movie, and there are going to be at least a couple more of them based on how this one resolved itself.
Oh, gosh.
And, you know, it's about a group of seemingly immortal, invincible people that have been around for generations and they work as, it's unclear, do-gooder assassin type people, or, you know, it's not entirely clear what their job is per se. But you follow them around and getting into hijinks, and they're being tracked down by people who are looking for the secret to eternal life, and they think they're going to get it in these folks, and all the, you know, murder and hijinks that ensue as a result. So it's a quick recap. I didn't think it was terrible, but it was sort of like short on depth, and, you know, it was pretty good setup as to how things were, how their little universe worked and how their powers worked and everything. But as the movie went on, it kind of got more and more kind of hokey and over the top and sort of more talky. Like, they did a decent job in the first 45 minutes or so of, like, showing you how things worked. And, you know, they didn't give you a lot of, like, exposition dump verbal kind of stuff. It wasn't just like, flunk. You know, here's who we are and here's how we work. And, like, you know, until the character came along that needed that information. So they're, you know, doing their whole thing and being who they are. And it turns out that there's a new one. There's a new immortal person that's just been killed. And they all have some kind of a psychic connection. And then they go get her and they have to introduce her to the life that she has now. And why she's special and unique and that kind of thing. And train of thought went right out of my head. And yeah, and once she shows up, they then have to, like, explain everything to her. And as such, they explain things to the audience, some of which were necessary, some of which were not, but all of which was done with talking, just dialogue, with a couple of flashbacks thrown here and there. And, like, flashbacks don't count as showing and not talking, which is sort of your general, you know, film 101. Is if you can show somebody something, do that rather than just have the character say it out loud. And they did a pretty good job in the first half of the film of just showing you all the things you needed to know as the audience. In the second half of the film, it was just everyone just wouldn't stop talking to each other about what was going on. So it got worse as it went along, and I kind of got bored as it went along. And some things about it I thought were pretty interesting in terms of the practicality of what these people would, like, what it would be like to live like that. We can get to some of those nitty gritty things, but, like, overall, I was like, yeah, this is fine. It wasn't terrible, but it wasn't awful. So, very middle of the road, I think.
Very Netflix kind of movie.
Yeah, it was just, oh yeah, this is something that they would do. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I've already paid for it, so.
Yeah, it didn't cost me anything else.
Yeah.
So, what'd you think?
I thought it was boring as hell. I couldn't believe it wasn't over like five times, because I watched it. It was a Sunday morning and I sat there and like I kept pausing it to see how much time was left, and it'd be like an hour and 30 minutes. I'd be like, oh my God, I thought this was over already. Oh yeah, it just went on and on. I mean, it's hard to make people who can't die and you keep putting them in these situations where they're getting beaten up exciting, because it's not till like halfway through when you realize that they can die sometimes. Like eventually they don't come back to life. And you're sitting here like, oh, that would have been helpful to know in the first 2 minutes, because then there would have been some sort of stakes involved. Like if your main characters can't die, then what am I worried about here?
Oh, I don't know. Well, go on. But then I have something in response to that.
I mean, like, they're very old and they can't die. And it's not till that halfway through when you figure, I mean, there's other things in that they suffer, which is what makes it hard to watch them. Like everything is painful for them. You know, they don't, it's like they're invincible. You know, they suffer and they get damaged and it hurts. But the other problem in terms of character wise is that it's just sort of taken for granted that you will understand that they go out and help people, and they're kind of jaded in the beginning of the film. Like they look around and like, oh, we haven't made any difference at all in the world. You know, people are still selfish and hurting each other. But so my, you know, raises the question of, well, why are they still doing this? Because it doesn't seem to be making any kind of difference. You know, like they travel around the world, they have to keep themselves a secret. It's a lot of work on their part. Why do they do this? I have no idea. They just sort of take it upon themselves to do this. They never once say, like, it's our mission or we feel we owe it to somebody. I mean, it just never comes up. They just always did it, to the point where now that they're like jaded, they don't really want to do it anymore. I'm like, why are you doing this? And it made it really tough to follow them and care.
Yeah, they tried to do that subtly. You know, the first scene of the movie is about them, you know, deciding to get back out in the field, and you know, and they weren't explicit to say like, you know, this is what we do, this is our, but like they said it, like you can see that she's the oldest, and so she is the most jaded, and she says like, you know, as much, it's not worth it. This world is not really worth it at all. And then one of the guys says to her, like, come on, we need to help these poor kidnapped girls. It's been over a year. And he says, this is what we do. And they're very vague about that. But like, I don't know how much explanation you need from that initially. Initially, it's sort of enough to go, okay, well, they've established that they're going to go rescue a bunch of kidnapped African girls who've been taken to a place to presumably be used as sex slaves. It's terrible. And, you know, it's something that they used to do a lot, and they don't do it anymore because she's really depressed, and that's pretty clear. And they have to talk her into it, and they're very determined to do so. Okay, I'm with you. And I don't know how you get around explaining, you know, the Knights of the Round Table without having a scene where you just explain what the Round Table's about, but that's kind of what they needed, and they really didn't give you that. They give you a lot of talkiness about who they are, who they knew, and what this new girl's life is going to be like now. But that's, you're right, like they needed some explanation. I think they thought they did enough in the beginning, and they really didn't. You were just supposed to follow that they were just constant, because at that point, they're not doing that anymore. They're running for their, not lives, but they're running for their freedom.
Right. I mean, when you have a sci-fi thing, there's always going to be world building that you have to do. You have to fill in something. And you can do it in many ways. I mean, this movie talks way too much. You know, like we see them get blown up and their limbs ripped open, and then they just get up and they shrug it off. And then they spend 20 minutes explaining why this happens and how much it sucks. I'm like, yeah, it looks like it sucks. They're groaning in agony. Okay, I get that. But they need these things of motivation because, like, I'll give you an example. Like, I don't understand why Charlize Theron's motivation is gone. And then you find out when, like, during the Salem witch trials, her and her best friend were tortured over and over to prove that they were witches. And they throw her friend into the ocean in an Iron Maiden where she drowns for eternity.
That was just about the most horrific thing I could think of.
Yeah.
Like, that gave me nightmares.
Whoa, that sucks.
Because, like, having, you know, you and I were both swimmers in high school and you in college, and, like, spending a lot of time underwater, you get an appreciation for how important it is to breathe. And so, like, the thought of drowning is really one that terrifies the crap out of me. Like, I can feel my chest tighten just talking about it. And watching someone, you know, is going to drown perpetually. You know, until
for like 200 years or something like that.
Yeah, no, that was
so like that would have been good for her to say, you know, I mean, they say like, I never found her. And then time went on so long that finding her, even if we did find her, she would be so insane from dying endlessly that she wouldn't be worth bringing out of there. And I was like, okay, that's pretty dark. So like that would have been a good reason to say like, and so because of that, I felt it was no longer worth helping anybody because they tortured my friend. And she could have given up and just said, I'm going to just live my life in solitude. And I run away every time someone tries to find me. But that doesn't happen. They still keep doing things. And I was like, why are they doing this? It seems like so much trouble.
Yeah, their motivations were, I guess, deliberately vague because they didn't want to have that scene. Because it's kind of hokey to have that scene, just as it's hokey at the end of the movie when she talks to the new girl and says, like, you've given me back purpose. You've given me back hope. You know, just watching you do this is, you know, kind of rekindled that thing in me. And I'm like, oh, okay. Kind of spelling it out for us there, but...
There were better, more interesting avenues that they didn't go down, and they just stuck with the very basic superhero route of, you know, this girl's new and we have to explain things to her and she brings back hope to the team. Like, if they have the one guy that betrays them and says, like, if we let them experiment on us, maybe they can figure out why this happens and so we can stop it. And I'm like, that's a good angle. But the rest of them just like shrug, like, well, whatever.
Yeah. See, his story, his name was Booker, or Book, they called him. Like, his story was really interesting, and like, he had a little bit when he was talking to the new girl, whose name I can't recall.
I think her name is Nile.
Nile, thank you. I'm like, Naya? No, that's not it. Where he says something, you know, she wants to go and like leave them and go find her family and tell them that she's all right, and you know. He gives her a really interesting piece of information that I just never would have thought of. Like, if you're alive and you're never going to age and you have children and they get old and they get sick, like, you know, he was from like, you know, the early 1800s. He fought, you know, for Napoleon.
Yeah, for Napoleon.
And they all, you know, everyone died at like 40 back then. He's going to live forever. And they all, it's like, they're going to resent the hell out of you. It's going to be awful. And I was like, oh my god, yeah, like that's what we like. So there's like our modern day problems with superpowers, you know, it kind of begins with Marvel and then DC took it over when they try to sort of Marvelize DC stuff. And like, that's what like Man of Steel was about, was the fear of being captured and then experimented upon. So like, if you were different, the general fear in most of these pop culture stories is that they're going to do what they do in this movie and tear you apart to figure out how you work. It's kind of very, it's basically the goose that laid the golden egg story. You know, mm-hmm. You can either just deal, you know, accept it, oh look, we get golden eggs forever, we're okay, or you can cut the thing open and see how it works and find out that it, you know, you've lost the thing. That's basically what every superhero thing has been about since Spider-Man. And this is really no different. But, you know, 200 years ago, that would have been different. What people thought of somebody who was supernatural, you would have witches, which you get here, but also just the personal resentment that people would have for you for the fact that you'll never die and they're going to sit there and suffer. And then, like, oh, that's really, I never thought of that.
I mean,
interesting.
Being an English person, did you ever read Tuck Everlasting? In like fifth or sixth grade, I read it.
No, I never did.
It's a book about this family from like the 1700s that finds a magic spring. They don't realize it's magic, so they just drink out of it because they live on the frontier, and it lets them live forever, and they're invincible. And so they have all of these problems. Everyone they know dies, and they have to keep kind of moving around, but they don't go too far because they don't want anyone else to get the magic water, because they're like, this is a horrible existence. You know, like, we're all stuck at the same, like, Ma and Pa are still stuck at the same age, like, forever. Like, this sucks. And it's about this girl that falls in love with the guy, and it becomes the whole thing. Like, will she take the water or will she not? So, I mean, that story's been done. I would have liked to have seen it if, so she would tell Yijifor is like the guy who figures it all out. He like has like the board with all the pins and the string, you know, like a mad scientist. And he explains that like when Charlize Theron saves somebody in the Civil War, their great grandchildren go on to come up with penicillin. Everything they do helps, ends up helping the universe. I was like, okay, that's some kind of logic. And I would have loved to see him be like, oh, we accidentally saved the woman that gave birth to Hitler or something. So they could kind of be like, maybe we're not helping all the time. Like that didn't go our way.
Yeah, that was an odd, I mean, that was kind of hammering home a point, which I don't even think she knows about. Like, the whole point of that scene was for, you know, to reinforce the idea that she shouldn't give up on humanity because and, like, stop helping people, because if she does, it's going to get bad, because everything she's done from this point on has been good. Like,
yeah, like her interfering, Charlize Theron's interfering with the world has been beneficial, whereas she sits there and goes, this is, you know, everybody turns on us, it's not worth it. Well, then stop. I mean, what's the mission?
So. Right. And like, there doesn't, so that character is basically the man in the chair, which is a thing from Spider-Man Homecoming that I absolutely loved, when his overweight Filipino friend Ned was like, I'm your man in the chair.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's just so great, because that's exactly what that guy is. And every like NCIS show has that guy. Just like, you call him on the phone and you go, you know, I'm in this building. How do I get out? What do I do? And they call up the plans from City Hall right away. It's all, yeah, in 3D.
Pull up this, like, I just hacked into the security cameras, so you're good to go. I'm the eyes, yeah, in the sky. It's like, okay,
you know,
whatever.
Turn north and then west. You're like, yeah. How do you know which way north and west is? That's what my favorite thing about cop shows. He's heading north. I'm like, how do you know which way is north all the time?
What's
compass everywhere?
What's great about Spider-Man is like, he just asked him, like, look up the directions of how to turn the lights on in this car. Like, it's like really simple stuff. Because they're just high school kids.
But so his thing was kind of interesting. And he presents himself as like a retired CIA guy. I'm going to come back out of retirement to help these poor girls. That's how he sets them up in the beginning. And, you know, he's going to then sell them to, you know, the worst character written into a movie that I have seen in the longest time, as the hoodie wearing CEO of Big Pharma UK.
And yeah, he was horrible.
It was so terrible.
What was that?
Just like I don't know if there's a way to write the nefarious billionaire CEO guy differently anymore. Like, there's a few versions of him. There's the cold, calculating older guy, like Michael Douglas in Wall Street. There, and then there's like the new kind of billionaire who's like a weirdo tech genius who's like 25 and, you know, wants to own the world, kind of a thing. So like, there's not much you can do with that character to make it interesting. But how do you say his fucking name?
I think it's Chiwetel Ejiofor.
Chiwetel, right? Ejiofor. Chewy, we'll call him.
Chewy.
He presents himself as something he's not, and you know, it turns out that part of the information you get from him is true, that his wife died. He's searching for a way to, you know, prevent suffering, kind of thing. But that's not, you know, that's incongruous with what his ultimate point was at the end of the movie, which was that, like, she's so important because every time she saves somebody or does something, it improves humanity measurably. And I have found a way to measure that. And basically, this is just a giant ripoff of Highlander. And not just in, like, the, you know, immortal kind of way, but, like, there was always a man in the chair in Highlander, too. There was a guy, they were called the Watchers in the TV show. I didn't watch the movies. I just know it from watching that, you know, kind of middling USA Network TV show they had years ago. And, like, people who are invested in the lives of the immortals and how they behave and what they do. And rather than, you know, present him as the guy that throws them, you know, under the bus to the big pharma guy to be experimented on, his main point is sort of like an afterthought. And I guess this is how, like, you do a big setup thing for a sequel, is he becomes the man in the chair who's been watching them all these years and continually gives them purpose and says, no, you can't give up. Because, like you said, when you were in the Civil War, you saved this guy. He went off to do this, and his grandkids did that. But for a single movie, like a one-off, which it seemed like this might be at the time, like his purpose for being there was muddled until the end. Where it's like, oh, so he knows everything. He figured out everything. And that's not a small deal. But to you know, it seems like an afterthought when that's the whole point of his being there, is not to sell them to Big Pharma and then have a change of heart, but in fact to point out that their, you know, little acts of do-goodery are actually massive acts of do-goodery that save thousands, if not millions, of people. And they should have done more with that, and they just sort of didn't. It didn't get to it till too late.
It was sort of about his wife, you know, like,
yeah.
If they had shared what they knew, my wife would be alive, which is also a good point.
And I mean, so, like,
isn't that sort of true?
Right.
Story's a total mess, is what I'm saying.
But, like, you could totally rewrite this to have him tell them, like, I know who you are, I know what you do, and then have that happen alongside of the new girl getting her powers. Now you have more than one person giving the new girl information. It doesn't just come from your superheroes, it comes from the guy who doesn't have the superpower, but who is, like, obsessed with them, in, you know, involved with them, who's there, and, like, they can both join the team at the same time with two different sets of skills. His skill is he can somehow figure out, you know, he's got connections in the CIA or whatever, but he's also figured out how they've influenced humanity over the last 3,000 years. And, you know, her skill is that she's young and she can fight and she's a Marine and she's also not going to die anytime soon, like, you know, they eventually will. So.
Here's the other thing with these sorts of stories is that they're hard to shake their sci-fi B-movie status because it's hard to get the tone right. The tone was all over the place in this one. You know, it's they're an inherently silly concepts. This is why the Marvel movies are great fun. They're not exactly high art because they're dealing with ridiculous concepts of men in flying suits and things like that versus the DC movies that fall flat on their face because you're trying to bring a levity to things that are, you're removing the levity out of everything. And now they become very serious and they're harder to take seriously when they're too serious. So this one is kind of up and down. I mean, the dialogue is poor. That doesn't help. Mm. You know, I mean, Charlize Theron has some real horrible dialogue, but in some scenes it's like really dramatic and we're supposed to feel really sorry for these people that they're sort of burdened to live forever and outgrow their families and live lives of solitude. And then in other scenes, they can beat up an entire truck full of soldiers. And then when they step out, they're like, where are we going now? Hey, you've got a nice place here. Like, it's kind of all over the place. I'm like, are we supposed to take this seriously or not? You know, and then the villain, of course, is twirling a mustache and Yijafor is over there crying in the corner because his wife is dead. I'm like, what am I supposed to be feeling here? You know, it's a silly concept. Like, you got to pick one, pick a lane. Am I supposed to feel bad for these people? Am I not? I don't know. So like whenever these scenes would happen where they're like talking to the new girl about like how hard this is going to be, I started to zone out because I'm like, well, there's just going to be some goofy line later or poorly scripted action or something. Something's going to mess it up and break it up. You know, it's okay to have some moments of seriousness. Like Iron Man, the first 30-40 minutes of Iron Man are not a laugh riot, but I'm never really worried that, first of all, someone's going to get their head blown off because the movie was kind of violent. But yeah, also that, like, you know, he's not going to have this existential dread hanging over him the rest of the time. There's an idea that the concept is a little bit silly and different. I mean, it's different, right? Like, we all know that immortal people don't really walk around. So we have to get over that suspension of disbelief first. And then you can take us on a story, on a journey.
Yeah.
Thanks. I can see you nodding.
That's yeah, it just wasn't much to it, and there's the lack of consistency. I also felt that the music was really terrible, and that did not help with the tonal issue. Was it like all this awful pop music being played, and like not like well-known pop music, so far as I could tell. I'm not like the expert on that, but like.
No, it felt like a Scrubs episode. I was like, I don't know this song. Like, where, what bargain bin basement did you find these people? I mean,
like, you just couldn't find someone to score this, so it had to be done with like just tones on a keyboard, and then we're gonna cut in this weirdo kind of drippy pseudo rap pop thing.
Yeah,
it had
the feeling of like, they spent a lot of money on some things and not a lot of money on others.
That's literally what I wrote. It goes, oh, this is lazy or cheap or both. Like, writing in this.
I couldn't tell. Like, some parts of it like looked good, but some parts I'm like, what? Oh, what is this?
Yeah. Did you see the betrayal coming when that guy book sells him out to the other people?
I wasn't too surprised.
Okay, like, I wasn't shocked. Like, oh, I had no idea. Because, like, just because they were so poorly defined to begin with that, like, nothing would have surprised me because I didn't have any sort of solid expectations for them. It just, you know, again, his thing was the most interesting bit about it. Like, that was kind of an interesting avenue to go down. Like, we're going to do this awful thing, but maybe we could die after that and we would be, you know, be happier. I also thought that his punishment was kind of interesting.
Yeah. I mean, you can't kill him, so what else are they going to do?
Right. But, like, you know, we'll meet you here in 100 years.
Yeah.
And then that was just, like, I'm always, this is just, like, a thing with me, I guess, because I had the same experience when I watched Interstellar, but, like, giant passages of time, mostly, you know, in solitude. I guess I find that such a daunting idea. I'm a fairly social animal, fairly extroverted. So, like, you know, in the movie Interstellar, there's that one great scene where they go down to the wave planet, and that planet is so close to a black hole that time is passing so much faster on the planet's surface than up in their spaceship. And so they go, all right, we'll go down for like an hour, and to the guy that they leave behind on the ship, that's like 7 years. And so he's like, no, it's good. I'll hang up here by myself. I'll get work done. I'll work on the math for this problem. And when you get back in an hour, I'll have solved all the equations. And they get, you know, there's the whole episode where they get knocked over by the wave. It takes them longer to get back up. And he's like, it's been 25 years. And I remember when I saw that, and the actor played it well, I was like, oh my God, they went down there for what was like 15 minutes worth of the film. That guy who came back, he was 25 years older, and the only reason he wasn't dead was because he went and took like a cryogenic sleep a couple of times for several years. Like, that concept to me, this, the expanse of time, I find very daunting. And so when they said to him, okay, we'll meet you here in 100 years, I go, yeah, that sounds awful, you know. And of course, at the end of the film, you see him drunk, trying to find his way into his apartment, and that's when you find out, dun dun dun, that the drowned girl is alive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess that's like the sequel that I don't want to watch, right?
Well, when they went into such detail about who she was and the fact that that's how she was, you know, quote unquote, killed, and we looked for her for decades and couldn't find her. You know, like, I'm thinking, well, I wish they would, they had done something with that other girl. Like, he just kind of dropped that whole storyline, and turns out, no, they were just sort of saving it. But, you know.
Those flashbacks look so stupid and cheap, didn't they?
Yeah, they really did.
Like, the costumes and everything. I was like, it looks like a History Channel reenactment or something.
You know,
like,
or a
just
high
don't
school
look
play.
Good.
Like, yeah.
Yeah.
Histories, mysteries. You know, it's just kind of what you thought.
Yeah. Yeah, so, like, I guess she'll be back. I mean, whatever. I mean, Charlize Theron is not immortal anymore by the end of the movie. Like, it just sort of wears off. Which, okay, like, that's the kind of thing I don't need an explanation for. Because the characters just say, we don't know why either. And so that kind of makes it, like, it makes it harder for us to know when we're going to die. It gives some risk to them. I mean, you don't know that they don't come back for a little while. Like, in the beginning, you just sort of assume, oh, they just keep coming back to life because they all said how old they are. But once they don't know anymore, it becomes like, well, why? Well, I really don't want to know why you're doing this, because you could die any minute. Like, you're just now as fragile as the rest of us.
Yeah. The other thing, too, vis-a-vis that, was that you didn't know how old she was. Now, I guess if you knew anything about, like, ancient Greek mythology, when she said that her name was Andromache of, was it Cytheria?
Or I think she was a Scythian, right? The Scythian, or, you know.
Whatever. She's
right.
Ancient Greece.
The 7th century B.C.
Yeah, so, you know, it's
so
2000
thousands
years.
And thousands of years.
Yeah, and so, like, you know, he's one, you know, one guy, you know, is Napoleonic. The other ones are crusaders from, like, the, I don't know, the 1100s or whatever it was. But she's even older than that. But you don't really find that out unless you know that. And, like, you don't get a sense of any of that nitty-gritty bit. Like, they could, it could wear off. These people could. And, like, I didn't get a sense as to how old, because they first find out. So, as far as I could tell, there are 7 people that have ever had this, so far as they know. That was the other thing. It's a small clique. And she makes the thing, which, well, I lead an army of 4. Like, it's a small bunch.
That's a piece of dialogue that didn't get edited out.
Yeah. And, like, one of the things I liked about the concept of the Highlander, just like in, like, the Blade movies and a few other things I can't think of right now, but, like, the idea that there are extraordinary people living among us who are fighting their own battle in, like, a subculture. Like, in Blade, it's vampires. You know, and this is the kind of world you live in. You don't really realize it, but turns out that there are a bunch of people who are immortal and who, you know, are waging their own little, you know, fights with swords once a week. And, but with them, it's just the lot of them. So it was the first guy they knew who died, who was thousands of years ago, the black guy. There was the Asian girl. There was Charlize Theron, her 3 friends, and now the new girl. That's it. And so it was fine that they didn't say that they didn't know why, you know, that they got this power and nobody else did. But, like, the sense of, like, there's no sense of community of, like, you know, we're looking for other people. We're, you know, none of that. They have this psychic connection to each other, and that's about it. You don't get much more than that. So it wasn't much world building, I guess, is my point. And, like, there really could have been more.
Yeah. And at the same time, it felt like there was way too much.
Yeah, because they kept talking about it.
Yeah.
You know, like, I didn't.
So different from the one with Chris Hemsworth, where they were just shooting each other in Mumbai for 2 hours. I was like, couldn't they have split this stuff equally?
Yeah, right. It's just running around and shooting. Yeah. One talkie scene, and then they get into a fight, and he kills that guy.
Yeah.
So, this wasn't like it was the worst filming thing I'd ever seen. It was like, it was a sufficient way to kill a Friday night when, you know, I'm watching TV by myself. I go, what can I put on here? You know, like, cause I have found in the age of streaming that, like, it's very difficult for me to watch anything. Like, I've been watching so much YouTube the last 6-7 months. Initially, because I didn't want to watch the news or television, and there was nothing new that was coming out. It was just all bad news on TV, and there was no baseball. There was nothing like that. Oh, they canceled the fucking Olympics, for Christ's sakes. Everything got canceled. So I was like, you know, I've got an attention span of about 15 minutes. I can watch, a thing for, that long about a car or how to make an old-fashioned or, like, you know, it's like how to cook something. And then when it came time to sitting down and watching something on television, because I can't just flip around the channels as easily, you just have to make a decision. You go look at all your options and go, all right, I am going to pick this thing. I'm going to watch the whole thing from beginning to end. This is the next 2 hours of my life. And that just seems sort of like making it a commitment to something that I really may not like. And so knowing that we were going to do the podcast, I was like, all right, well, I can watch this because then we can do the podcast on it. But, like, it's really hard to watch anything now without feeling that sense of, like, I could be doing something else if this is not that good.
Is that because of the pandemic or just because you're an old fart?
No, I think it's because of the nature of the way we access entertainment now. I think the pandemic has increased the time that I could be spending watching streaming television and Netflix. But, like, you know, it used to be we would just flip the channels around and you'd either find something or you'd find nothing. And you could either turn off the TV and go read a book. And who did that?
I'm sorry, what?
But, like, you either end up watching, you know, Bob Ross, or if you were lucky, The Godfather was on. And it didn't matter where you came in. And The Godfather is the easy one because everyone likes The Godfather. But, like, other movies, too, you're like, okay, this is fine. And I'll just watch the rest of this. Like, I'll watch the rest of, you know, Broken Arrow with Christian Slater and Howie Long and John Travolta. That's fine. But, like, here I would never think to put on Broken Arrow and watch Broken Arrow from beginning to end.
God, no.
That's a terrible idea. But, you know, so, like, sometimes just it's helpful to have some sort of structure for watching mediocre television and be like, all right, we can, you know, tear it up on the podcast about it if it sucks. So it was a sufficient way to pass the Friday evening.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, it's not the worst movie I've ever seen, obviously. It's just boring and cheesy, you know? Like, you would watch this on the Sci-Fi Network. It just has slightly better production values than Charlize Theron. She's the big draw.
Yeah, and Chewie.
Yeah. I mean, is Charlize Theron, is she supposed to be good? What's the deal with her?
A good actress?
Yeah. And don't say Monster, because that's what my wife said. She's like, well, she was good in Monster. I'm like, that was 20 years ago. It's like when people say Ben Kingsley. Well, he was Gandhi. I'm like, yeah, 30 years ago. Like, what have you done for me lately?
Ben Kingsley's had a pretty decent career. You can't knock Ben Kingsley.
I know. I'm just saying. He's also been in some horrible films.
Well, see, Ben Kingsley has, you know, and maybe this is, she's not British. She's South African. But, like, the thing about British actors is that they will do anything. Like, they don't care. They work all the time. Like, Michael Caine's whole thing for years was, like, he kept winning awards but never showing up to the awards ceremony to receive them because he was always on, like, the next thing he was doing. It wasn't like, you know, Leo DiCaprio, who you look at his IMDb page, like, oh, look, he's been in 40 movies and TV shows his whole life. Whereas, like, you know, other actors in Britain, about the same age, had been in 4,000 different projects. So Ben Kingsley did, like, The House of Sand and Fog and Gandhi, you know, like, he's just, and what was the other one? Like, that weird movie he was in, like Sex Fiend or I don't know. He had a really weird name like that. Anyway.
Yeah, but so Charlize Theron was in the other one they always talk about was when she was in Mad Max. She was the girl in Mad Max. But she didn't have to do a whole lot in that.
She did, but like, and I'm not going to say that what she did in Mad Max was easy, because it wasn't. That's difficult. Like, doing nothing on film is hard. Like, your body always, your face always wants to sort of do something. And to kind of stand there and hold yourself in the frame and not do anything and let the camera and the director do all the other work, that's, you know, that's not easy. But yeah. As far as, like, I've never thought much of her. She's just extraordinarily gorgeous.
Yeah.
But
she wasn't great in this. So I was like, I honestly don't know if this is how she always is or if just like she doesn't have a lot to do here or what. Like, what the deal is with her here.
I don't know. Like, she didn't have much to like, whenever she had something to say, it was always kind of, it kind of fell out of her mouth. Like, this is what I'm supposed to do right now. So it just kind of clunks out. And I'm trying to think of a movie that she's been in where I was like, you know, she was really good in that. And it's not jumping out at me.
Yeah.
And I'm looking over her credits here. And
I didn't really know anybody else. I mean, they were fine, I guess.
I mean, she's doing a lot of these kind of action movies now. Atomic Blonde, there's going to be a sequel to that. She was in one of the Furious movies. You know, some of these weirdo, like The Huntsman, which is like a reimagined Red Riding Hood or Snow White or something. And then some, like, you know, indie films, like the film that was shot at the bar we used to go to, Young Adult.
Was she in that?
She was the love interest.
Oh, she was the young adult.
She was the main character.
That's right.
Yeah, for those of you who don't know.
She was okay in that.
If you ever go watch the movie Young Adult starring her and Patrick Wilson of Aquaman fame, there were several scenes in that movie that were shot at a bar. It was supposed to be a bar in Wisconsin, because there it was. Yeah, that's why. This is a good story. So for those of you who own a bar and somebody comes to you and says, okay, we want to shoot a movie in your bar. And
Minnesota. It's supposed to look like Minnesota.
No.
That's what it says on IMDb.
Well, then
Minnesota.
Wasn't it a Green Bay Packer bar?
Hey, I'm just telling you what it says.
Okay, that doesn't make any sense.
I think it was just supposed to be an ugly bar.
And I'll tell you what. Well, no, that's the thing. So what happened was this film company approached the guys that we knew that owned a bar, and they said, we want to shoot, you know, several scenes in your bar. It'll take about a week. We're going to change everything about the place, and we'll change it all back. And we'll pay you like a ridiculous amount of money. And what you do is you go rent a car or buy a car. They bought a car. And drive to New Orleans and get drunk for 5 days. And when you come back, the bar will be the way that you, just like you left it. And that's what they did. Then they came back and they saw the bar and it looked awful because it was painted to look like a sports bar in, Phil says, Minnesota. I say it was Wisconsin because it was green and yellow, the color of the Green Bay Packers. And so these guys that we knew saw how awful the bar was. And they went, this is great. We'll leave it like this. And when people see this movie, they'll recognize our bar in their movie. And I'll tell you why that's funny. Because when you make a movie, you use movie lighting. And you use cameras. And you have to, like, the way that the bar looks like under fluorescent and neon lights is not the way it looks like on camera. So you and I walked into that place for the first time, and I went, what the fuck happened in here?
It was really ugly.
It was really, really bad. Because then, and this was the best part, this is how you knew they should have been on Bar Rescue, was didn't they decide that they were going to close? They closed for another week to redo the bar back the way it looked before themselves at their own expense, and then built furniture, which they then had to like lacquer and put all this, like they built tables and chairs.
They built some tables and chairs. What happened? Well, they went on vacation because they were flush with money. So they're like, let's go away.
Yeah. They and went to New Orleans and got drunk for a week.
And then everything didn't go, you know, the worst was that for people who drink, listen to the Three Drinking Podcast, they didn't turn any of the taps off. They just left. So everything was still running. And when you tap a keg and you have it going through lines and, you know, if you don't pour the beer out, all the air just goes straight into the keg until the next thing you know, it just turns into foam because the beer goes bad and you've pumped air into this metal barrel. So all the beer came out awful afterwards.
Well,
like you can't just go away and leave all this food here. It was technically it's like a food. It's a perishable.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
And I think at one point, like when they shut down the second time to clean up, and like the glasses would stick to the tables because they were so freshly lacquered.
And it got hot in there,
and like the beer was coming out hot because they forgot to turn the cooler back on downstairs, and it's very, very strange. But this is a bit of a digression.
Well, spoiler alert, the movie didn't do well, so you wouldn't have recognized the bar anyway. Nobody went to see it. I mean, I saw it, but, you know, when it was on demand.
But, like, I'm looking at her IMDb page, and there's really nothing here that's like, okay, she was great. It's like Monster, she won an Oscar for Monster. Mostly because she did the thing that you do when you're a pretty girl who wants to win an Oscar, is you make yourself look ugly. That seems to be what you do, right? Like, that's how you win Oscars.
Pretty much. Or you play somebody who's mentally deficient.
Yeah, but you make yourself unattractive. You can't play, like, a regular... So what's interesting is that, like, you take a standard movie star leading lady, and if you want to get her an Oscar, you turn them into a character actor. And I kind of find that funny. Because there are so many character actors and actresses out there already that you're like, why not just give the role to one of them? They would have been just as good, if not better, in this movie. It's like when they make a movie musical and they cast, you know, Anne Hathaway and the other guy, and like they can't sing, and there's literally dozens of people working on Broadway who could have been in your movie and nailed it, but no, you had to cast. What's that fat guy's name? Russell Crowe in your movie. Like, oh, okay, I don't understand that, but sure. Why not? But yeah, no, she's not great. She's not been in, she's been in some movies that got attention. North Country, I know, got some attention. The Road, which we liked the book, but not so much the movie.
Well, she was in that?
Yeah, she was the wife. She was like the wife in all the flashback sequences where...
Okay. Yeah. I was gonna say, there's no women in that book, but she killed herself.
And like she's been in like 1,000 little things, and you know, a lot of these sort of action-y movies, Aeon Flux.
She must like doing them. I mean, this one had a lot of action too. So
she's basically an action star, and that's sort of how she's... She didn't start that way per se, but that's sort of, you know, it seems to be the thing that she gets cast in the most. I think that she stands out in, Mad Max, because Mad Max was so good. Like, that movie didn't really have characters. It just had a really great premise. I mean, I remember watching, I think it was Just Right, the YouTube channel, where the guy was just like, it didn't even have a screenplay. It had like 1,000 storyboards, and that's what, you know, which is really what makes this film so extraordinary, was that they wrote dialogue for the characters, but there was so little of it, and it was all told visually, you know, that really didn't matter, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, but yeah, she's fine.
Much like she's as good as anybody else in the film. I just, you know.
Yeah, she doesn't stand out. She's not out of place, you know, next to all the like the nobody actors. You know, Chiwetel Ejiofor is the only one that stands out because he's really a very talented actor.
Yeah, he's really good.
Yeah.
And they paired him with Harry Potter's stepbrother, who's the bad guy, like the pharmaceutical guy, and he's not good.
Oh, is that who he is? I'm thinking this guy's got to be somebody.
Yeah.
Is Harry Potter's like this, like...
Like the regular kid that lives in the home when he's on summer break all the time.
Oh.
He's like a fat little kid.
He was fat in Harry Potter. He was fat, right?
Yeah, he was a little chubby.
Because the foster father was
was enormous. Yeah.
Yeah.
But the kid's supposed to be fat because like Harry Potter doesn't get any food because he lives under the staircase. So
that was the one thing about that movie/book series that I really didn't understand, and I didn't really pay attention to much of the movies as they went on. But like, why would he keep going back there?
Yeah, he stops after a few years.
Yeah,
like those first few years, he does keep going back. You're like, isn't he rich? Can't he just like get a hotel or something? But he is a minor. I don't know.
Isn't he also magic?
Yeah.
So I don't. Yeah, I don't really understand that. But anyway, this was okay.
Yeah. So, you know, if you want to watch it, go ahead. You paid for it.
Yeah. What do I care? Do whatever you want.
I mean, it's been that kind of year. I mean, everybody just assumes I hate everything anyway. So I don't know. Go ahead. I don't care.
Yeah. Hey, we all love the Marriage Story.
Watch The West Wing again. What do you want? Yeah. I'm trying to think of all the Netflix movies that have actually been any good. And that's one I liked.
And not about it. Not a rewatchable one. Like, hey, let's go back and watch Marriage Story again.
No, I wouldn't watch that again. And I don't think it was made by Netflix. I don't know what they did. They got it before anybody else, right?
Yeah, they basically, small budget films that they go and they bid on them, like in Entourage when they have Medellin at Cannes and there's a bidding war over that.
Yeah,
you know. So. Yeah, this is what we get now.
Yeah,
maybe someday.
It's been a year.
Anyway, if you have any thoughts about the Old Guard that you want to share with us, you can find us on Instagram and Twitter at Three Drinks In Pod. We're also on Facebook. If you want to email us, threedrinksinpodcast@gmail.com. Don't forget that we are available on all streaming services like Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio. Subscribe, tell your friends, leave reviews. That's everything, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, all right. Well, as always, please drink responsibly, and we'll talk to you all next time.
Bye.
Bye.